dumb. It's not really important what color your dress is. What matters is the heart inside.
Well, I'm gonna be the very best witch that I can be, Mom. And I know having a good heart is important.
On this show, we've only covered one other Miyazaki movie, since it's rare we really do anything animated. And it happens to be the movie that Miyazaki made right before this one, My Neighbor Totoro, which we covered on episode 58. Miyazaki's fairly new animation studio, Studio Ghibli, was working on My Neighbor Totoro when the idea was pitched from group Fudosha. Either Miyazaki or Isao Takahata, who had co-founded Studio Ghibli together, to start working on a film adaptation of the new popular novel, Witch's Express Home Delivery. Tonight we're talking about that film adaptation, Kiki's Delivery Service.
Kiki, mite.
Studio Ghibli had been founded in 1985. All three founders, Miyazaki, Takahata, and the producer, Suzuki, had impressive careers before this point. Miyazaki began working on animations as an in-between artist, or the artist who creates intermediate frames between the keyframes, for Toei Animation in 1963. He worked his way up on several films like Gulliver's Travels, Beyond the Moon, and Animal Treasure Island, before moving to APRO in 1971, where he met Takahata and began collaborating with him on Lupin the Third Part 1, a 23-episode-long animated series, of which Takahata and Miyazaki would co-direct 17. Based on the manga by Monkey Punch, Lupin the Third is the world's most wanted gentleman thief and would get into misadventures and heists.
Why did they stop talking to me? Am I boring? Italian.
In an insanely popular manga in Japan. For Miyazaki, it was lack of creative autonomy that made the move to APRO necessary, which was a bit ironic as Miyazaki had never directed anything alone at this point. His series directorial debut came in 1977 when he was chosen to direct Future Boy Conan, a 26-episode long series. In a career choice that will be repeated later on, Miyazaki became a chief animation instructor for Telecom Animation Film in order to help train the next generation of animators. APRO had split off into multiple subsidiaries, including Miyazaki and Takahata's new branch, Nippon Animation. They clearly worked well together and liked collaborating. Miyazaki's feature film debut came in 1979 with Lupin the Third, The Castle of Cagliostro. Continuing the work he and Takahata had done on the Lupin the Third TV adaptation. The most important collaboration they would have before founding their own animation studio was Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, which Miyazaki actually turned into a manga before turning it into a film. Both the book and the movie would be insanely popular, and Miyazaki and Takahata knew they had to start their own studio to handle the copyright. Nausicaa as a manga would go from 1982 to 1994 and span 7 volumes. Miyazaki would end up being completely overwhelmed by having to keep putting out manga volumes while also working as both an animator and instructor. By 2020, Nausicaa had sold 17 million copies in Japan alone.
Revive the giant warrior. Use it to repel the invading kingdoms and learn to live with the monster. Look.
An insect did that.
That's right, and whatever lucky man becomes my husband will see worse than that.
The post-apocalyptic eco-wasteland it takes place in was based on the Minamata Bay incident, where Chiso Corporation, a Japanese chemical company, spent a decade pouring mercury into the bay from their wastewater, leading to 10,000 people getting a neurological disorder from consuming mercury-contaminated seafood, which was termed Minamata disease. Critics would also see a strong anti-war message, and in a pattern copied later by Takahata a few years later, Miyazaki would completely deny and say he was only trying to entertain. So in 1985, Studio Ghibli was founded. Miyazaki came up with the name because he really liked planes. Ghibli is the nickname for an Italian scouting plane, the Caproni CA-309 Ghibli, the Italianized version of the Libyan word for a hot desert wind. Miyazaki said he felt Studio Ghibli would blow a new wind through the anime industry. Miyazaki was working hard on My Neighbor Totoro, which had started from an hour-long short film with the character Mei being based on his niece. It expanded out quite a bit from there and had 8 animators working on it over the course of 8 months. Takahata was working on Grave of the Fireflies. These two projects would become two of the most famous films in the Studio Ghibli canon. With Grave of the Fireflies being called one of the greatest animated films ever made, Takahata followed Miyazaki's lead and denied that his adaptation of Nausicaa's 1967 short story about the cost of war during the firebomb of Kobe was anti-war as such, and Totoro being incorporated as the Studio Ghibli logo and mascot from then on. Though Takahata and Miyazaki were both busy, Miyazaki agreed to become the producer on Kiki's Delivery Service while they searched for a director. Eventually, Miyazaki hired Sanao Katabuchi, a storyboard artist and writer who had written episodes of Sherlock Hound that Miyazaki had directed in 1984 as a first-time director for Kiki's Delivery Service. After 8 months, Miyazaki was finished with My Neighbor Totoro, and one by one as the work had been finished, he had been moving his My Neighbor Totoro collaborators to Kiki's Delivery Service full-time. With extra time on his hands, Miyazaki began reading through the first draft of the screenplay, which he decided he was completely dissatisfied with. He began making a ton of changes, including traveling around to cities like Amsterdam, Paris, and San Francisco with his creative team to decide what he wanted the buildings in the film to look like.
It's right up here, Kiki. It may need a little dusting, but I think you'll like it. Oh my, it's a little bit dustier than I remember. If I weren't about to have a baby, I'd help you clean.
That's okay.
All right then, water and bathroom are downstairs. Give a shout if you need anything.
Thank you.
He also had photographs of buildings in Sweden from a trip he had taken there, trying to secure the rights to make a Japanese animated adaptation of Pippi Longstocking. I think you can probably guess where this is going. After returning from traveling, Miyazaki finally decided he wished to direct the film, and had Sanao Katabuchi take the assistant director's role. It's probably for the best, as he pretty quickly started to clash with Eiko Kodono, the author of The Witch's Express Home Delivery, who didn't want changes that drastic made to the story she wrote. In The Witch's Express Home Delivery, Kiki the Witch turns 13, and because of a custom for witches, must spend a year in a new town with no other witches to prove she can make a living. She heads to the city with her black cat Gigi and her broomstick and ends up starting a delivery service. The book is 11 chapters and each one chronicles a misadventure that Kiki has while in her new town. Miyazaki was looking to hone in on a very specific part of Kiki's story. He saw the gulf between independence and reliance, especially among young Japanese girls of the time, as the key to maturity and growing up. And because of that, Miyazaki wanted to heighten Kiki's misfortunes, adding a scene where she's attacked by crows, she loses her witch powers because she loses her confidence, and the final airship scene. This is what upset Kodono, who saw her story as being about Kiki's good heart that could overcome any crisis and didn't want trauma or heavy conflict in Kiki's story. Miyazaki and Takahata invited Kodono to Studio Ghibli and showed her around and revealed he was planning to direct the film personally, which eventually led to Kodono to agree to let the film continue.
Why don't you come up?
The film is about growing up, and how growing up leads to the confidence that makes a young woman into an adult. The 1980s in Japan saw an extremely slow but long-standing post-war cultural shift start to be noticed internationally, where the feminist movement in Japan was making real gains. By 1982, 20 Japanese universities had women's studies courses, and there was a focus on getting more women to be independent and in the workforce. Looking at Kiki's Delivery Service and all of Miyazaki's films from that cultural perspective is interesting. The extremely rigid gender roles, which had existed in Japan for centuries, lasted all the way until Japan lost World War II and was occupied. General MacArthur introduced the Japanese Constitution in 1946 and pushed the diet into voting for it into effect in 1947. One of the biggest changes in the Constitution was the establishment of official gender equality, which granted women's suffrage to all adult women in Japan, as well as equal rights for marriage, divorce, and property ownership. However, the cultural expectations and norms for women still had most women in traditional marriages. Even among working women, 57% were married in 1982. In 1986, the Equal Employment Opportunity Law took effect, codifying various laws and protections for women in the workforce, including protection from discrimination, spelling out requirements for employers when an employee is pregnant, like time off or reduced work hours, and requiring equal opportunities for men and women. Also setting up a system of mediation for employers and employees who are alleging harassment or discrimination. One of the things that further affected these changing norms was pop culture, and Miyazaki was one popular artist known for creating strong, independent, resilient female characters in his TV shows, manga, and films, including Chihiro from Spirited Away, San from Princess Mononoke, and Sophie from Howl's Moving Castle. So I think it makes perfect sense that in 1989, so much of Kiki's Delivery Service is about a young witch gaining confidence and maturing into an independent woman through using her exceptional powers to start a business. Miyazaki also talked about how Gigi, Kiki's black cat familiar, represents an immature part of her. In the Japanese version, even when she gets her powers back, Kiki stops being able to communicate with Gigi because she's now matured. That was changed for the English version, interestingly. The budget was 800 million yen, or $6.9 million, and it became the first Studio Ghibli film to become immediately successful, grossing 4.3 billion yen, or $31 million. The first English language dub came in November 1989 from Streamline Pictures and was exclusively for Japan Air flights. In 1997, after Disney purchased distribution rights for Studio Ghibli, they released a second English language dub that's the one now seen on DVD and streaming, with Kirsten Dunst as Kiki, Phil Hartman as the cat Gigi, and Janine Garofalo as Ursula. The original Japanese version had Minami Takayama as Kiki and Ursula, Rei Sakuma as Gigi, and Keiko Toda as Osono.
Trusting your spirit, yes, yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. That same spirit is what makes me paint and makes your friend bake. But we each need to find our own inspiration, Kiki.
Before I introduce the panel, please like this video and subscribe to the Movie Night Extravaganza YouTube channel. Then hit that bell to get notified whenever we're streaming. Super chats are now open. If you have any pressing questions, send us a super chat, which helps me maintain the expenses for the show, which I'm obligated by the rules of the Geneva Convention to stop everything and ask the panel. Another way to help us out is to become a patron and give us money every month. In exchange, you get access to all of our after parties, bonus content, and we'll tell you even more movies we watched recently. Patreon.com/Movie Night Extra. We have a Movie Night Extravaganza Discord. There's an invite link in the episode description, and we have a Letterboxd HQ account, so those are two more places to follow along with us. Okay, let me introduce the illustrious panel. We are live right now on This Space. If you aren't following them, join This Space TV on YouTube. Link below. Christina Oakes is a co-host of Movie Night Extravaganza, a streamer on Twitch, twitch.tv/cosmopolitics, a host at This Space, hosting Christina's Corner, and is across social media at Cosmopolitics and on Letterboxd at Christina. Alex streams on YouTube and Twitch at Devil's Advocate Productions, is a host on This Space on Tuesdays, and is a filmmaker. I, of course, am a talking black cat familiar and your host, Forrest Miller. At this rate, I'll be a white cat by the morning. Yo, I hate when your room be so dusty that like you're like, oh, by the morning I'll be a white cat, you know, I'm not a black cat.
Yeah. But don't be calling me out like that.
Well, you have black lights. Like I feel like you can either hide it or see too much of the dust.
But, yeah, I see too much of it.
But Alex, actually, I have to unmute you because I muted you all those
times.
You were coughing.
Sorry.
What's going on?
Hey, man. What's going on, guys? I love Studio Ghibli. So, you know, of course, I was going to come on and talk about them, just gush about them as an animation studio.
Yeah.
But I love that intro. A lot of history I didn't know.
Yeah, I put a little bit too much into it. I should say.
Really?
I finished a book about General MacArthur that went into the Japanese Constitution. Recently, so I was like researching that a little bit too much, I think, when I put the intro together. We should say that Conan right now is on tour, and he's in Salt Lake City playing at Ace High Noon Saloon or Ace High Saloon tonight, and tomorrow he's in Boise, Idaho, Eugene, Oregon next day, Portland, Oregon the next day. So if you're looking for Conan Neutron and the Secret Friends tickets, that is the cities that he's going to be performing in.
I love
Studio Ghibli too. So this is your first time seeing this, right?
I've seen Princess Mononoke a long time ago. I've seen Spirited Away.
That's everyone's go-to one.
Me and my wife watched a movie called When Marnie Was Here. Yeah. And that was amazing. That was when neither of us had ever heard of. And it ended up being really like super emotional and deep and just very sweet. Like anytime you throw on a Ghibli movie, you're going to get great atmosphere. You're going to get great like animation, action scenes. And then just also food. The food in anime in general is just like always.
Then I got the People versus Food YouTube channel for that.
Especially in I think it's Spirited Away. That's the one with the little ramen, right? Taken to the bathhouse. Yeah.
But then, like, I remember watching that as a kid and being like, oh, I want some of that cartoon ramen. So fucking
yeah, bad. Yeah. Final Fantasy has great ramen food scenes in Final Fantasy 15. But Ghibli informs so much of, like, I'm a gamer. I play a lot of video games. A lot of video game vibes. Like, it's very Zelda. There's so much in it that I can see them trying to replicate with Zelda over at Nintendo. So,
and there's a lot of overlap between like manga, like you know, mm-hmm. that Miyazaki, someone that has
like actually written manga,
or at least he dipped his toe in with Nausicaä, like that thing that I was playing like a little bit of, and it ended up with while he was putting Studio Ghibli together, he had to keep writing issues, and he was getting so like frustrated. He's like, I said I'd do this for 7 volumes, but like that means I have to put out, you know, more manga every single month. But yeah, there's like, and then video games. Like, I feel like it's all like a lot of the stuff that, like, Lupin the Third, which is, you know, the thing that the first thing that they did together, you know, before they did Studio Ghibli, like that whole property has been turned into at this point like a CGI movie, like where they do like, you know, the CGI or the, you know, like the CGI stuff, but it's like almost like a 3D version of like the style that Studio Ghibli kind of does, and then also video games and manga, like it's all like they have properties for all of those.
Yeah, now I'm going through Dragon Ball actually, and I, you know, the amount of filler episodes that are in Dragon Ball because he was still writing the book and it wasn't out yet, so they couldn't follow the story, so they had to just make stuff up. Like, I can imagine what in Japan, a lot of the times it's one creator, it's one writer and artist doing everything. Versus here, where it's usually a writer and then other artists who draw the actual thing. But
yeah, I mean,
it's so much work. I can't imagine
with this movie, right? Like for the first, you know, for an early time, I guess, having his own studio, Miyazaki was going to take off his own, you know, his own micromanagement style, where he is like, you know, writer, director, creator, all of this stuff, right? Like he would have done all of it, and slowly as time went on, he was just going to be like the executive producer. And as time went on and he like did more research to help out with the script and stuff, because he had written the script, like he had to, he eventually just went, you know what, I'm going to direct this. And he had an assistant director that he was going to let direct for the first time. And the guy ended up not being able to direct it for the, like, his first movie, because Miyazaki eventually just went, oh man, like the creator of this whole thing is kind of upset that we're doing darker stuff than she wanted with her character. And like, I've already gone on these trips to like Paris, and I don't even know if he brought that guy with him, Paris and like all these places to look at buildings to see if like, I want the buildings to look like. Like, you might, you know what? Like, maybe I should just direct this. And he like, I think he kind of just his creative control, like his creative mind was just like, I can't let somebody else try to direct
this. Yeah, sometimes it's just like, nah, this is the one I want. Like when Cameron came out of retirement to do, not out of retirement, but like, what was Alita Battle Angel? Remember that movie that James Cameron really wanted to make this for like years and years and years? So he was like, oh, I'm gonna help, I'm gonna be there, I want to be on set for that.
Yeah,
sometimes you know, you just your creative instincts just take over.
Yeah, I thought the thing about like the book kind of in the book, it's like her kind heart really gets her through these travails. And it's like, you know, Kiki is like this very kind character. And it's like, you know, if you have a good heart, no matter what life throws at you, you can kind of push past it. And I thought it was pretty interesting that Miyazaki's version of this is more like, you know, he compares obviously witchcraft to artistry, like it's his artistic instincts. And also, like, he has these really, these darker things like the crow attack and, you know, the dirigible that like comes in and, you know, is like the blimp, and she has to save people that are like, you know, to save Tombo from the blimp. And like, I thought it was interesting that his own darker style of it was about maturity and like what it takes for a young girl to grow up. And obviously there's been a lot written about Miyazaki and feminism and like, you know, how many of his movies have like strong female characters. I mean, the character of Mei in My Neighbor Totoro is based off of his niece that he's very close to. So he has like a, you know, he believes a lot in like the power of young girls, you know, kind of taking.
Ghibli has a lot of the movies star young girl. Mostly is always like a coming of age story. Almost always. Every movie I've seen is a coming of age story.
And one meant to teach like lessons to girls that are, you know, growing up, and like while being this really cool kind of thing, like to be kind of educational. Like I like that about it.
Yeah.
But Christina, when did you first see this?
Well, I first saw a commercial for it. I think I either had like the Black Cauldron or the Lion King Part 2 on VHS. And I was intrigued.
It's Disney that bought the property and did the English.
And it got panned a lot. The 1998 version got panned until they redid a few things for the 2010 re-release. What they did was they added more Phil Hartman lines. And everyone was like, better. That's what happened. That's literally what happened.
I mean, yeah, we should clarify. I did watch the dubbed version.
Yeah.
So I got the Phil Hartman, and it was, I was looking up who was.
That was like his last movie before he was murdered.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I
also watched Coming to America. He was in it briefly.
Yeah, he was in a lot. He was in like all kinds of stuff, and and Andy Dick gave his wife cocaine, and then his wife murdered and did murder.
Yeah, suicide.
Yeah, it was
That's why we call him Andy Dick, you know.
But yeah, I love his voice acting and everything. In this, I forgot as a kid how much he kind of sounds like Squidward doing these lines. He's like kinky.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
I was reading online, and apparently in Japan, there's a thing where like cats are seen as like having this kind of obviously feminine energy, which I think here too. But like the cat, like the voice is a lot higher, like it's a feminine voice in Japan. And I watched both versions, but but it's like a high, like you wouldn't necessarily think that it's a guy doing the voice. And then for the for the 1997 one, it's Phil Hartman doing his classic like kinky, we gotta go. But it's like two different depictions, I think, cultural depictions of cats.
Yeah because you got the like what was the cat on Salem from Salem, Sabrina?
Yeah,
sassy. He had kind of like a gruff voice. Boo. To like wisecracking, so that I guess they went with that and probably inspired Salem.
I mean, familiars in general. I think a familiar a lot of times when they do talk. I mean, it's not often. A familiar a lot of times is a male figure, but I mean, it kind of inverts, I guess, the classic like a man above a woman. Like it's a witch can command kind of like this male cat around to do her bidding.
Yeah.
But Christina, what was the first time you saw this movie?
I saw it.
The first
back
time I saw it was like a month ago.
I saw it back in 98 because I owned it on VHS because of all the commercials for all my other Disney VHS tapes. And I was like, oh, that, and also Spirited Away too. So I was like, because I love cats, and I was like, this movie has a cat and it's a girl that's a witch. I'm sold. Let's go.
Yeah. Do you remember the first Miyazaki movie you saw? Was this it? Or was this?
No.
I know it wasn't for you because you just saw it a month ago.
It was
for me.
Oh yeah.
Kiki was my first.
Yeah, I was asking Christina because I know you didn't discover Miyazaki.
I was five.
But yeah. Alex, what was the first one you saw or that you remember seeing?
It was first one I saw, I believe, was like Howl's Moving Castle, maybe Spirited Away. I think it was Howl's Moving Castle. But the first one I really remember seeing was in high school. I was taking a Japan class. And it was Princess Mononoke. And I was like, oh, this is fucking cool.
Oh, damn. All right. Because the first one I saw was Spirited Away. And I think I was in middle school at the time, because it was like in 2001 it came out in Japan, and then it came out later in America. And I remember seeing Spirited Away because I think Howl's Moving Castle had come out, and whatever order it was, one of them had just come out, and I was like, oh, I want to watch, this seems really cool, I want to watch the other ones. So I saw Spirited Away and thought it was really cool, and then I saw Howl's Moving Castle, and I think one of the later ones that I saw was Princess Mononoke, because I remember my friend telling me, oh, like you're gonna want to see this, like this and my friend lives in Japan now. He like moved
nice.
He was so inspired by
they're getting a new prime minister though, right?
Yeah, they got their new prime minister, and it's a woman, but it's the first woman that's ever been prime minister.
Yeah, she's the worst.
But no, my friend told me about that, like the heads getting chopped off, and he's like, "Oh, it's kind of messed up." Because we were like little at the time. He's like, "Kind of messed up, but you can see all these heads get cut off." I remember I saw Princess Mononoke because of that. Wow. And I mean, My Neighbor Totoro too. Like, I don't know. I've seen a bunch of them. There's a bunch I haven't seen. Every time I do any research into him, I'm like, "Shit, he made so much stuff."
Yeah, like, is he never gonna? He's never gonna retire, right? Like,
I mean, well, he just made The Boy and the Heron.
But he keeps saying this is
Boy
it,
and the
this
Heron is the first one I saw in theaters. We went to Alamo to see that. It was great.
Well, it was a while since he really came out with something. I think. He's like 84 now, and he's still going.
Yeah,
still doing it.
It's funny because he has a whole another generation of like Studio Ghibli is going to continue after he's gone. Like,
oh yeah,
there's a whole another generation.
Well, also, it does help that you know Ghibli's like you know you could do AI stuff with it now, and they're very much unhappy with that.
Yeah, he spoke out about AI being terrible. Like you know before a lot of like American artists were speaking out about it. Like he was very early to that wave.
Yeah, and then that was on purpose that they then used his art in their AI.
Yeah, because they're fucking dicks.
It's a way to be like exactly. And it's like this is
the AI bubble is about to burst, and I cannot wait because that's basically what's holding our economy together. It's like yes, burn. Anyway, fun fact: Miyazaki didn't want to bore the audience during the film credits, you know, at the end, by just using names. So he set it up to be like a mini sequel so that the audience would leave the cinema feeling happy.
Yeah, well, it's so well designed for like kids.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like the entire like I mean aesthetic. The story obviously is about but the story obviously is about, you know, maturing and like, you know, her it's like a metaphor for her coming of age and like, you know, she realizes that she's you know, she could be her own person. She's confident and she's, you know, she realizes that she doesn't need her parents. She doesn't need, you don't need your parents, but she doesn't need like, you know, adults or even people her age that are, you know, that are, yeah.
I say a lot of Ghibli movies are very dreamlike where you kind of go from scene to scene. Things don't really make sense, but the characters just go with it. They're confused and they just, you know, understand the machinations of this, so they just go. This one felt like kind of a lazy dream, like very lazy, not poorly made, but lazy in that like lazy river, like just chill. It's low stakes. She's making a little delivery service. I was a little surprised we never saw the village or her family again. like they really just like started off
have like
oh she's leaving it. Goodbye and then that's it. Not even like writing a letter. But it was very sweet, adorable. You know, Phil Hartman carried a lot of it. Honestly. He was just very funny.
I have this is only a minute. I have Miyazaki talking about his phrase of pre-ending.
Oh sweet.
ああいう時って喋れなくなるんですよ。その後エンディングで一緒にいるじゃない。あそこで喋ったら変だよ。
あそこ喋れなかったですね。
うん。ちゃんと来たよねだって。
来ました
っけ。来て何言うの。
いや魔法が
魔法が復活した。魔法がさらに深くなったんですよ。ジジがさ、ね、もう僕がいないとすぐこうだからとかこう、そいつ納得すんの。頭に来るよね。黙ってるお前。何か得るものあったらなくすものもあるんだよ。これ結構かっこいい言い方でしょ。いつまでも猫と話してねえ。
That's adorable.
I do like when you win, you sometimes lose though. Like,
yeah,
like that as a final line. I wish
not for terrible people though. You know what's interesting though? How the story this is like the opposite of Earth X in the DC universe because this story takes place in an alternate 1950s year where both world wars didn't happen.
Yeah.
Oh really?
You could take that to some real dark places, but it's supposed to be in Europe. It's supposed to be either I think Sweden is where they eventually kind of discussed, like, he decided that he wanted to set the story, because he had these photographs of he had gone to meet with, and I said this to you off Oscar, but he had gone to meet with the woman who wrote Pippi Longstocking, mm-hmm. and he had talked to her about like doing a Japanese version of Pippi Longstocking, and she said no, but he had all these pictures that he took of like buildings in Sweden. He was like really interested in like the architecture. Yeah. Yeah. And while he was waiting to do this, he went to like Paris, he went to Tokyo, he went to all of these different places to try to see like, I want to make the buildings in this town look a certain way.
Dude, and I said out loud to my wife when we're watching this, I said, this is Pokemon. This is what Pokemon looks like now. Like the newer games, this is the aesthetic.
Yeah.
Also, he was saying that, you know, with the fictional city of Corico, you know, the shore, what the one side is the shores of the Mediterranean, the other one's the Baltic Sea.
Yeah.
Ooh. Okay.
So I think over time he's kind of added more into this kind of mystique, but there's there's these pictures that I saw online where it's showing Stockholm and it's showing the town from this movie, and like it really does look, you see, it's like the architecture is extremely similar.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Including the clock.
I mean, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous movie. I mean, all of them are, like, all of Studio Ghibli's are, but like this one, it is so cozy. It is very fall, you know. Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Coated. Tonight.
Yeah.
40 degree weather.
Like, you can just imagine like this, you know, this like this guy going around with a camera taking all these pictures of like buildings like this. And then when it comes time for, you know, to create this kind of town in this movie, he goes like, oh, I got the perfect, and like pulls out, you know, these Polaroids that he took of all these buildings.
Yep. Just draw from it. Just draw almost identical.
You know, I drew all my life, and I was listening to a podcast of Kevin Smith, the director, and Neil Adams. Homeboy. Neil Adams, a famous DC artist, and he was talking about tracing, like taking pictures of real, like, you know, cityscapes or bicycle, whatever you want to draw, and tracing it and using it as reference. And I never did that. I just thought you great artists memorize what everything looks like and how to draw it. So I was like, oh, I've been doing this with a handicap my whole life. But yeah,
makes a difference.
These are great cityscapes, and mm-hmm. just again every little detail, even the imperfection on a spoon, like every little thing is thought about. And
well, you can see artists I mean, like, you know, before cameras are widely available, they have reference, like a lot of artists would take reference, you know, sketches, so they would go somewhere and they'd realize that like something really looked like what they wanted to create in a painting or something, or in a drawing later. And you can, like, a lot of times in museums they'll have, you know, like they won't have like I mean, Picasso probably isn't the one, but like, they won't have a Picasso, they won't have, you know, all these different artists, but they'll have like a reference, like it's easier to get the reference sketch that he did for the actual thing than it is to get, like, you know, the full thing. A lot of museums kind of pad their walls. Yeah.
Every time I hear the name Picasso, I just think of that one moment in Titanic where Cal's like, you know, what his name's Picasso? He won't amount to anything. I know it. He did, though. Also, some of those artists I thought were like in like the 1800s. Like, no, they died. They lived well into like the 1970s and 80s, like Salvador Dali or whatever.
Dude, a lot of playwrights, I assume, were like, you know, old Shakespearean times, like Sondheim and shit. And it's like, no, they were just, they're guys, they're alive now. Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Well, Sondheim just died.
Well, I mean, Andrew Lloyd Webber does sound like the name of someone who would have, you know, been around.
Right? They all sound like.
Well, freaking Daniel Day-Lewis is married to Arthur Miller's daughter because they met on the Crucible. Like, some of these people are not as ancient as we'd like to be. And like, even with Miyazaki, like, everyone's like, oh, he's 84. I'm like, that's still kind of young considering how long Studio Ghibli has been around. Yeah. Has been around that long.
Well, he started in like the 60s. But he was an in-between artist, which is like, he would be the person that, you know, because they have like the action pictures drawn out, but then they would need another person to draw like the, you know, the shots of things slowly happening, or the shots between shots, pretty much. So you'd have like the initial person who draws,
backup artist.
I mean, the sense, like, you'd have the initial person, and I wonder if it's different now with you know, with computers and stuff. It's got to be, right? Like, but you have like
bring
the initial
back 2D animation.
But you have like the initial person who comes up with like, you know, the important shots. And then you have like an in-between artist that goes, all right, this is like 1, 2, 3. And then you have the, like, you know, the next person does like the motion. So they do like, so yeah. So he was an in-between artist for like the longest time. And at the time, it seems like they were doing a lot of, you know, like Western canon or Western books as like Gulliver's Travels, stuff like that.
You know, that makes sense. To just do a lot of animation.
He did Animal Treasure. He did Animal Treasure Island, which is Treasure Island, but all the characters.
But no Muppets. No Muppets. I love Muppet Treasure Island.
So much of early cartoons is based on like fairy tales and just like public domain stories that we know.
Yeah.
It makes sense that they would use like Western stuff. Like, hey, this is, it's foreign, it's hip, it's in style. Gulliver's Travels is the new thing.
I mean, you know, to them, like this stuff is foreign. Like it makes sense.
Yeah.
Like,
but so the story of Kiki, we should get into that a little bit, I guess. She leaves her home. She goes to find a new
like
city.
Like any 13-year-old would.
That, yeah. Right? You turn 13. You're 13. Bye. 13. Everything you've known for the 13 years. Goodbye. And apparently no contact ever again. Made me think the whole movie. Oh, her mother must have come from somewhere else.
Like,
and just
but
landed
she can't,
in this
there's
town.
Telephone. Right? Like it's in this weird space where it is supposed to be like the 1950s. But yeah. You know, like in
no
the story,
pool skirts in
but,
the sight.
Like, they're like, "Oh, don't worry, we have a telephone," and it's like she doesn't call her mom once.
Yeah,
no continuity error, no phone call. How do we know she really has a mother? Like, yeah,
she
does, don't worry.
So she has by the way, Josh, you saying shout out to y'all doing a good movie? It means it's one of the 5 movies you've seen.
Yes, dude, he hasn't even seen The Wizard of Oz. He's prepping. He's preparing to watch The Wizard of Oz for Wicked for Good, and I'm like, well, first of all, you shouldn't have to watch The Wizard of Oz just to prepare for another movie. You just watch it just because.
because.
That was good.
Clement Domingo, though. Anyway,
so she goes to a new. She has to find a new city and like make it as a witch
in this economy. Well, it's the 1950s. I think the economy is a bit higher considering both world wars didn't happen in this story.
But like, but you're saying, like in this economy, it would be Jeff Bezos's witch delivery service. Like,
yeah.
This, yeah. I hate that my brain works that way because it's like I was sitting there watching it and I was like, this would have gotten bought up by Amazon almost immediately.
Yeah.
They wouldn't even let her have like a local delivery service.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she leaves her town. She goes, she gets on her broom. She's not very good at flying. Like that's
like
the first
we all
thing that
are.
We should probably talk about. Like she gets on her broom and she's not a very good like she's leaving home before she even has like flying down. Like she hits the bells and then she kind of, you know. She's into it, and then she's kind of up in the air, and it's cool. But like, she's not a very good flyer. She gets out there, and then the first person she meets on her trip is like the snobbiest witch that you've ever. And she's like, "Can you turn that music down? I'm trying to meditate up here." And she finally gets to a city, which is kind of funny if the city she gets to is like Stockholm, because it's like, oh, that's like
is the like, woman in the woods a witch? Is she a witch?
Which woman in the woods?
The one that she meets?
Oh, no, I don't think she's supposed to be a witch.
Okay.
She's an artist. But, like, that's apparently that's a lot like being a witch.
Yeah.
Apparently artists are very much, like, are very much not, like, cool in this movie, apparently, if you're going to be very boomer about it with kids and their music.
Yeah. But it's interesting that in the intro that you mentioned that the writer of the original story didn't want her to have like the crows attack and like have to get the broom back.
Yeah. So her stories were a lot more like there's like 11 chapters. Like losing a stuffed cat toy and using Gigi as a substitute and so she can recover the lost one, which happens, but he adds the crow attack. Saving a child from the ocean during a day at the beach. Recovering her broom that's been stolen by a flying enthusiast. Posing for a portrait, then delivering it to a town art showing. Getting a giant knitted belly warmer to a ship out at sea from an eccentric old knitting woman, figuring out when the clock tower breaks on New Year's Eve. or figuring out what to do when the clock tower breaks, delivering musical instruments to a concert after they were left on a train by a haughty group of musicians. Fuck those musicians.
That's something that Conan and Neutron Secret Friends would do. Just kidding.
No. He leaves this automatic guns blazing.
So it seems the books are very just like chill, very low stakes.
Yeah.
Daunting task, though.
So a lot of the stories, I guess, according to her, are like, you know, she has a very good heart. She's supposed to have to be like the good-hearted witch, and she uses her heart, which makes you wonder if there's like a bad-hearted witch.
Yeah, like, there's a wicked witch in the west, north, you know.
A good heart, and that kind of gets her through stuff. And Miyazaki was saying, like, no, like, I want her to have these small struggles. I mean, not like, you know, nothing like crazy happens, yeah. But one teaches her another level of responsibility, another level of, you know, that she can rely on herself. You know, even she even loses Gigi's ability to talk, and like, it teaches her that she doesn't need to rely on Gigi, right? She doesn't need to rely on her parents. She doesn't need to rely on any of these things that were, you know, that as a child you would rely on. So it makes a lot of sense. But I guess Eiko Kodono did not necessarily want that.
Because, like, in the movie, she does stop being able to talk to the cat. And does she get it back? I can't remember.
So apparently in the American one, she does. But in the Japanese one, she doesn't. And that's that's where that video clip that I played was, where he's like, what? There's nothing for the cat to say. What is he going to say?
Yeah. I mean, true. Like, I can tell, knowing that knowledge now and looking back, I'm like, oh, yeah, there's not much of the cat after that point anyway in the story.
Yeah.
Also, it's interesting, too, you know, with Gigi being, you know, like a black cat. Recently came out, a small town is actually banning the adoption of black cats on Halloween because a lot of people, you know, do things that are not pleasant. And I agree. Because also orange cats are the psychotic ones. Black cats are pretty chill, but it's orange cats.
No, but they think it's a witch, like a witch's cat.
Yeah.
But like my ex used to only eat black cats because of that. It was like, it's harder for them. It's a lot harder for them to get adopted because of that.
Yeah.
Because people think like, oh, these are evil or these are bad luck. And then a lot of kids like tie firecrackers to them and stuff. It's really fucked up.
Yeah.
I've liked every black cat that I've met.
Me too. What happened was my cat Zoe had kittens that we didn't know about until much later when we brought her in. So we kept them outside, and then there were three boys, and then they found a female black cat, and the rest is history. Just so many black cats, and it's like, no wonder our luck has changed.
But so she looks for a place to live and work in her new town. She finds the bakery owned by Asono and her husband.
Child labor laws. Hello.
1950s, maybe. I don't know this.
No, but I thought that was really sweet. Like, we do see her, like, again, giving her struggles. Like, she comes to the town, she has nowhere to go. So she's like, you know, walking around, sleeping on benches and whatever. And then she finds this tiny lady, helps out just by her good heart.
Get out of here.
Helps someone out. And then that person is like, oh, come hang out with me. And welcomes her into her home, and it was very lovely.
There's a cop, and the cop doesn't seem to be worried that there's a 13-year-old wandering around. He's just like, "You've disturbed the peace of these people. Yeah. I'm going to alert your parents." Here's a
kind of reminds me of the story of, you know, Madonna when she came to New York City with only $35 in her pocket, and before you know, she became the queen of pop. That's the dream right there.
But so she opens a business delivering goods by broomstick, known as Witch Delivery Service. It's not just goods, I guess, all kinds of goods. But her first delivery is a small stuffed toy of a black cat, looks like Gigi, as a birthday gift for Asono's neighbor's nephew cat. Which at least in the American, like the English version, it's Pam Alden. It's Bobby Hill's voice in the
Yeah, my wife immediately noticed that. I was like, oh, yeah, that's familiar.
I was like, yeah, I've heard this voice. Well, also, Gene Garofalo, too. I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That's the most random.
Well, I think as a kid, like, you don't necessarily know whose voice it is, but I feel like you know, like, you're like, it's familiar, right? Because, like, I remember watching this movie as a, like being younger and like not necessarily getting the, you know, it was the same voice from like King of the Hill, or if it was the same, like Janine Garofalo has been in like pretty much everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Including
yeah, the I was looking at the cast list and I was still waiting to hear her, but I was hearing her the whole time. I just didn't notice.
Yeah.
It's funny too. It was like when I was watching, you know, when I started watching the Majority Report, I was like, why does this guy sound like Hugo from Bob's Burgers?
But along the way, she is caught in the wind and ends up in a forest filled with crows, which attack her, causing her to lose the toy.
Okay,
birds. And Kiki and Gigi come up with a plan in which Gigi pretends to be the toy for Kat, so Kiki can retrieve the real one, which is like the thing you do not want to do. Like, you know, the big thing about Gigi is like as a character, right? Like, and I think Phil Hartman does a great job in that role, but it's like he's supposed to be, he's scared all the time. Like, he's scared of everything.
Yeah.
That, yeah. So it's like she leaves. So she leaves like the scaredest kitty, the scaredy cat, the scaredest cat ever at like a random person's house with like a dog. And
to give him some more colon blow. Y'all remember, know that cereal? from SNL?
So good. But yeah, I love that sequence too with the dog sniffing around. And he's so nervous and scared.
I remember those crows being like kind of, I was obviously scared of, but it's kind of terrifying, right? Like, those crows are so like they have like such attitude to like the, you know, they're like right up, yeah. they put them right up in the, in, you know, in the camera, right? Like they're right up on the screen, like
ah. Yeah, well, aggressive. I mean, it reminds me of when, for some reason, I don't know why, but we read, there's like in my ninth grade English class, we were able to read The Birds, Alfred Hitchcock's, as a play, and then we watched it, and then I was like, everyone's like, is she really getting attacked? I'm like, oh, she did get attacked. By the birds, so I wonder if that's like a nod to,
yeah, probably, yeah.
If I think of black birds, I think of that. I also think
the fact that she can fly, right? Like, she is obviously sharing the sky with other things that
she
can fly.
Believes she can fly.
Yeah, and it is funny that she's not very good at it at first, and she gets
yeah. Better. Well, the bells thing always cracked me up. Like, as she's flying, she hits the bells every time, mm-hmm. and it's like
everyone deserves a chance to fly.
So she finds the home of a young painter with crows, Ursula, who repairs the toy and returns it with the help of Kat's dog, Jeff. Kiki successfully retrieves Gigi and replaces him with a stuffed cat. Pretty eventful for her first. That's her first delivery.
Yeah.
Like, her first delivery is the one where she gets attacked by crows.
It's like, God, can this day get any worse? I quit.
But
it's like the equivalent to get for the man. This reminds me of like my grandfather had Dobermans and he trained them to be like really good guard dogs. And we had a beware of dog sign on the gate. And UPS guy drives up, he gets out, and my pup up comes up to, he's like, oh, and the man was like, oh, cute Doberman. He's like, don't let me take the package from you. Don't give it to me. He's like, oh, I got Dobermans fine. As soon as Alamo grips his arm, and that he's like, I told you. He's like, he's just screaming bloody murder. And I'm like, good thing I wasn't here to see that. But it's like, you gotta watch out, man. You gotta watch out. This like that's like the equivalent to like a dog attacking like the mailman or something.
Well, I like that the dog, and it ends up he helps out the cat.
Yeah, yep. The dog and the cat become friends. Which, you see, if they were gonna add Phil Hartman lines, they should have added the cat talking to the dog and like. You know, when they become fast friends, and but her second delivery, the second delivery is the one with the old ladies, and I fucking hate this. So the old ladies have the herring and have the herring pie or whatever that they're delivering to the young girl's birthday party, and she has to help them. She helps them bake the pie, and then she goes all the way there on her broomstick, and then the girl is like, "Oh, I told my grandma I didn't want a pie," and then the mom's like, "Well, who is it?" And she's like, "Grandma sent me another." I hate that because she took a long time to help that old lady bake her pie.
Is it worth being a witch after day two? I don't think so.
And then she falls ill, and her third thing is Asono gives her an address, and it's the address for the little boy who's been, you know, Tombo, that's been watching her the whole time, that clearly has a little bit of a crush on her. So she goes and she's like, you know, she's giving a package to him, and then it turns out, you know, she set the whole thing up to try to get her to meet this young boy. this nice young man. Yeah. She's kind of filling in for the mom, the mom.
Kind of too young to be too young to be dating, though. Am I right? I don't know.
Well, I mean, she's kind of out there with you know, she had to leave home already at 13.
Yeah, like 13 she's out there in the streets.
They're like, we've got to make it so that we've got to make it so that, you know, this young girl that's in the streets has someone to take care of us if anything happens to me and my extremely muscly husband that keeps walking in and grunting. And
yeah,
the husband doesn't even say anything, but the husband says less than Gigi.
I like the little boy. I think it's adorable, his little crush on her.
Yeah.
Songs had a different name.
I like that he
maybe his whole name is
trying to invite, like, and it's not so much romantic as it is her. Like, maybe a little bit, but like
being a friend, her,
like, yeah, exactly. Being scared to make friends outside in this mm-hmm. new city, and he's just being relentlessly kind. And I really like that whole plot line, and then he is the crux at the end,
yeah. So, the next part, he shows her the flying bicycle, which I love the detail that she's never ridden a bicycle, but she's rode a broomstick everywhere she goes, like, yeah. It's like. Well, my broomstick, I've ridden that since I was a kid, but a bicycle, I've never even been on one of those.
Bicycle.
Yeah, to go towards the beach, he wants to get the dirigible. Yeah, he wants to go on his bicycle. and it's, you know, it's supposed to fly, but it's not very good at flying because he just has a propeller on a bicycle. He almost hits a car, and it goes over the car, and they suddenly start flying, but not really, and then almost get hit by a bus, and then they go over the side, and, you know, she's embarrassed because they fell down a hill, and then there's a bunch of other kids. She's just getting used to making friends with one kid.
And the whole but how perfect that he's part of, like, an aviation club and is super into flying.
And yeah.
Like, that's the one thing that
she has that she can do.
Yeah.
And, you know, just having that as a theme, and with the airship, too, you know, having that as the theme of the movie is really mm-hmm. cool.
Yeah.
Love it.
So then the next part of the movie is when she loses her powers. She wakes up. She's depressed. Can't really do anything. She's been sick.
I'd be too.
Yeah.
That's how I've been sick for the last week, man. Like, it's not, yeah, I don't recommend it.
I do. I really relate to when she has the flu or whatever, right? She gets sick after she goes on that second, the second thing where she gets drenched. And when she's like, am I going to die from being sick to Sono? I relate to that hard.
I felt that. I was like, I'm dying.
But yeah, so first she realizes Gigi can't speak to her anymore. He's just meowing. Somehow he's more annoying when he's meowing than when he's like, kinky. Do we have to live in this town? Mm-hmm. But she's lost her flying ability, and she can't deliver things anymore, so she's stuck in the store.
She's got a case of the Spider-Man 2s.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't blame her.
Old Kirsten Dunst.
She lost her powers, and she's got a...
And it's Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah, which is... Yeah.
She probably was auditioning for Spider-Man once after this movie got released.
Probably. Yeah, so then Ursula visits her and asks if she can go to her house. She comes, and she shows her that there's a big painting, you know, that she's been working on, because she's a painter, of all of, you know, of Kiki. Like, Kiki's the inspiration. And she informs her that her crisis is probably some form of artist block. And that's when you get the cool thing where, yeah. you know, they compare witchcraft to artistry and to baking. And, you know, so she needs to find, she needs to find her purpose, which links up to the earlier part of the movie where, you know, that she's talking to her and she's like, well, the haughty witch is like, have you found your specialty yet? And she's like, not yet. So, you know, that's the next part of her journey. I think it's going to be having to find a thing that she specializes in. But
that's why there's always quizzes like, what type of witch are you? Are you a green witch? Are you are you a blood witch? Are you a delivery witch? Yeah, there's different. Apparently, I am a green witch, and I'm like, ooh, so I'm death technically. Okay, cool.
But while visiting the old lady's house from earlier that she made the herring cake with, which I'm sorry, sounds disgusting, but I would still be nice to my grandma and be like. Thanks so much.
Cake does not sound good.
Yeah.
She witnesses the dirigible they which is like, you know, the giant blimp. It looks kind of like the Hindenburg, which kind of makes sense if World War II didn't happen. There's no like Nazi symbology to the Hindenburg. But she sees it crashing on TV, and then she realizes as they're trying to pull it down, it's Tombo that gets stuck hanging on to, which I have a recurring, I wonder if it comes from something like this. I have a recurring nightmare where I am hanging on to something in the sky. Okay. And I'm like, the only, yeah, and someone like,
did
I'm
you just play stuck a lot of there. Uncharted?
No.
Okay.
But yeah.
But Boris is not a gamer.
Yeah, I'm not a gamer. Okay. But I, yeah, I don't know where it comes from. I just like a recurring nightmare that I have that I'm like, I'm holding on to like Crank? A hot air balloon.
You ever see that movie Crank?
Yeah.
With Jason Statham, remember when he's falling
Oi.
Out of the sky?
Just
it's like that. a lot of dreams like that, where you're just in the sky and you're just like,
oh, yeah, man. Yeah. No, it's oh, like man. A recur- it's like a recurring thing that I have with the sky. Like
it's an anxiety thing. That's what yeah. it is. I had a dream that I was on a cruise ship and it flipped like upside down. We were underwater. I'm like, why do I have this dream?
You watched Titanic too many times.
Probably, but it was a cruise ship. It's a lot bigger than Titanic. So.
But yeah, Kiki rushes to the scene of the dirigible, you know, crashing, and she asks to borrow a broom, and the guy gives her a broom. The guy does not want to give her that broom, by the way. She's like, "Can I grab your broom?" And he's like, "No, I'm gonna use it."
Yeah,
like, I got it. She should have been like, broom. "I'm gonna save this kid's life." So yeah, she takes off, and she gets her powers back in that moment.
She's a good witch. She manages
to rescue Tombo, and her confidence is restored. She resumes her delivery service, and she writes a letter home saying she and Gigi are happy.
So she contacted
home through. She contacted home through. She's like, I'm not gonna call my mom. I'm just gonna. What I gotta say it through a text.
Old fashioned text.
She sends it every night. She's like, I'm doing okay. We don't see that because that's off screen.
Yeah. No, but I like the scene. Her, you know, getting her powers back at the end, saving Tombo is very nice. He is hilarious. He's one of my favorite parts of this movie. Him and his gang that he hangs out with, like that reminds me of the Newsboy Legion in Superman, which is just like a bunch of kids who hang out in Metropolis and like help Superman solve crimes and shit. That's what they remind me of. Like that we all hang out and do the aviation thing and
yeah.
Well, go to, just nerd out.
Kids with those things, but it seems like the aviation club is pretty big. I still would, you know, I'd let them take the dirigible out a couple times. Well, I guess he does because he's literally on it and they're floating by. She's floating by and trying to wave to her and she looks back. But like, I don't know. I feel like I don't know if I'd get on the dirigible.
When the scene happened with the old ladies, when she first went there, I was waiting for it to turn and be like, oh, this is like going to be like Spirited Away where like they're monsters. And they try to like cook her and eat her. No, they're not. They're nice. They're just old.
Yeah, that kind
of weird. And it's kind of like Coraline.
That's why a lot of people agree. Like, this is just a cute movie. There's nothing really too menacing about it or anything like that. So it's like, oh, you know, when I was looking through all the Letterboxd reviews, a lot of it was like, you know, all I have to say is this movie's cute. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, can I find more reviews? But like, this is a very simple coming of age clean story. Yeah. Nothing too like, there's nothing really scary, but it kind of makes, you know, at a time where there was a lot of witches being portrayed as kind of evil, especially we've been going through this month, it actually shows like, you know, there's, you know, there is something that symbolizes, you know, being a witch with being young, not knowing a whole lot, being lost, and it kind of, you know, I don't know. It just shows that, you know, there's a different side to, you know, witches.
Yeah. Yeah. The good-hearted witch, you know, because in contrast to what you normally think of when you hear the word witch.
Especially in the 90s when you had like Hocus Pocus and, you know, like the Witches of Eastwick and with the witches and, you know, what other movies that came out in the 90s about witches. Oh, The Craft. Like, you know, like this one, I'm surprised we didn't go over The Craft, but this one stands out. You know, because it's like it's a Studio Ghibli movie. It's, you know, cute. It's simple.
Very cute. It's very cute. I mean, again, the black cat is very Salem from Sabrina, the teenage witch, who is also another good-hearted witch
on her misadventures.
I like the detail that every town seems to have a witch.
Yeah,
and it's like they all go together. Like
can we see some other towns and their witches and what they do to help people?
Look,
and it seems to be like, oh,
Offie, baby, come here, say hi to like everyone.
Again. And she lands, and
I love my baby boy. I'm not abusing him, by the way. He just doesn't like the camera.
But there's like a whole thing where it's every town has a witch, and I like that when she arrives in this town, they're like, we haven't had a witch here for a long time. So it's almost like she was fated to be there. Like they need her help. Yeah. And a lot of people they need a good delivery service because Jeff Bezos hasn't made it out there.
Amazon was still a bookstore in 98, right? Like, oh my god, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Just by virtue of her like creating this delivery service, you get the implication that the witches, they just help out however they can.
Yeah.
It's not like you go to them to get blessed or resurrect the dead or like, you know, which, you know, what do you think of when you hear witch? It's just, I'm going to create a delivery service. Maybe this witch over there, she cleans up litter. That's her thing. This witch over there, she helps get cats out of trees and takes care of animals. That's what she does.
Yeah, and like there aren't, well, maybe it's when you get them together that they like conspire. So they're like, as a witch,
we all got to separate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like the rule of two, the Sith. There's only two, and then one has to leave.
Yeah. We have to go back. I like when they're showing you that like there's other towns and they're up in the air, and that kind of the snooty witch. You know, the snooty witch she meets on her trip is just like, oh, that's my town. And you look there, it's like kind of like a big city.
Yeah, yeah.
Or
yeah.
Then she's like, wow, that one's big. And she's like, yeah, I guess you'd say that. And
it's like, this town ain't big enough for the two of us. I mean, city.
Yeah, maybe if there's another witch that shows up, you have to duel her to the death or something. And that's why things get real dark. Right?
What happens? It's like Hancock, where they can't be too close to each other.
But each one of her, I mean, there's no delivery that goes smoothly, which is cool. Like throughout this, like,
yeah,
there isn't a point in this entire movie where it's like, oh, you got to go to point A to point B, and then it's like, you know,
they're
like,
all. Huh. And again, watching this, I'm like, these are all like Zelda fetch quests, like side quests that you get. You know, this is very, very. I can see the inspiration.
Each one definitely is like a side quest. That's a perfect description of each of these little missions she goes on, but it's all side quests. Like there is no main quest to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all, and again, like Harvest Moon, I can see like it's very just chill. You're just hanging out, doing little stuff around the town, meeting people. Like it's, and again, the movie that we watched called Remember Marnie? What was it called? The Marnie movie. When Marnie was here. Sorry. When Marnie was there. That movie also was very like, first, someone leaving home, going to another place, living in this little town, this cutesy little town, and meeting all the people in the town, and just a very chill hangout kind of movie. It was a little sad. We weren't expecting that. We were watching it. We didn't expect to get hit in the feels, but this movie is very just chill. There's no feels really. And that's okay. It's okay to have just a feel good kind of like hangout, you know.
Well, Spirited Away always terrified me because the parents turn into pit. Like,
yeah, that's scary. Spirited Away is there are definitely scary moments in that.
And like they went from like Spirited Away, then like Howl's Moving Castle, then Princess Mononoke, which is kind of the most terrifying one. Which I was like, I remember just my friend being like, heads get cut off, and I was like, I'm there.
Well, Spirited Away, there's a game called Little Nightmares. And there's a whole section where, like, it's revealed that you're in a big moving kind of restaurant. You're basically in that Spirited Away restaurant tower thing. And, you know, again, the influence of Ghibli is just felt throughout the world and media. Like, Miyazaki is a legend, like a legendary artist.
I like that every generation of filmmaking, like, he's trained the next generation, and then they've trained the next generation. So this style of Japanese animation is like not really lost.
And which is sad because it's like, you know, it's not the same way in America. Like, you think the Hanna-Barbera style of animation exists anymore? No, you have to watch all the shows from the 60s and 70s. That's all you can't. Yeah, because everything's 3D.
Some Adult Swim shows, you know. that yeah. were yeah. taking those assets. Yeah, I mean, even thinking back to like the Batman cartoons or the Justice League cartoons.
Although they did, you know,
they did do Animaniacs recently, but
the Hanna-Barbera guys did kind of.
I'm mad that they canceled that.
Playing, like, you know, the later like Cartoon Network kind of people. A lot of people that were involved in Cartoon Network and in Nickelodeon kind of got trained by people in their circle, I think.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, Warner Brothers now is getting sold for parts, like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Legendary animations to Looney Tunes. Like, how the fuck do you cut the animation department at Looney Tunes headquarters?
I will say this about Disney. They actually give a fuck about their cartoon mascots, because there would be no Disney without Mickey Mouse. I mean, he was the first.
Yeah, but like Mickey Mouse cartoons suck.
I know. But like
using, themselves, they suck. Yeah, that's but why like I always like Warner Brothers more.
I know, but like use like the Mickey
I like Mouse some of thing. The old like 1940s.
But as
like,
an icon, you know.
I yeah. Like old, but like
Donald Duck thing. I feel like it was almost at its best when they were doing like World War II propaganda, though. And it's like,
Donald Duck. Yeah, kind of. They had Edge. Yeah.
He's like,
yeah. But it's just so funny to me. Like, you know, Warner Brothers, you know, they got Looney Tunes. They got very few Scooby-Doo stuff. You know, all the good cartoons that we'd watch on Saturday mornings, Ed and Eddie, Powerpuff Girls, Dexter's Lab. Like, they got rid of all of that. And it's like some of it's moving to Tubi, some of it's non-existent. People are pirating.
What happened to that Powerpuff Girls live action show? They were gonna make.
Oh yeah, the CW. We saw like, and I guess they leaked what they looked like, and they're like, "Now we can't do this."
Yeah.
they just wore like short dress that just looked like the cartoon. And it's like, yeah, this doesn't translate to live action.
That doesn't translate to live action.
No, it doesn't.
It's very stylized. They're not supposed to have fingers for one.
But American animation, right, is suffering. Sony's, ironically, you know, as not great of a company Sony is, they're doing pretty good with the Spider-Man cartoons.
If only they could get a live-action comic book movie.
Ninja Turtles. There was a Ninja Turtles animated movie that came out recently that was really cool looking. Kind of looked like the Spider-Verse a little bit, but more sketchy. Like, you could see the sketch lines in the animation. Yeah. It was very cool.
So
there is cool stuff happening. You know, the Cuphead cartoon is cool. I wish it was more Rubber Hose and less Ren and Stimpy, but you know, just the fact that Cuphead exists is cool. There's a lot of cool stuff happening in video game animation. But there's a movie called Mad God, which is like stop motion. That stop motion horror, no dialogue. It's amazing.
It kind of reminds me of when I would watch, you know, the VHS tapes of my favorite Disney animated movies, and they would do like little behind the scenes of like how they would make the animation and the voice acting and all that. We don't have any of that anymore, or the bloopers, the fake bloopers. They don't even have that in the Pixar movies anymore. I'm like, come on, man. Yeah. I love those.
Yeah, it's very soulless. A lot of the, you know, Inside Out 2 and They just try to like hit those emotional notes that they know they need to hit without thinking about like crafting an original story. Yeah. Like, because even the original stories aren't original. Moana is not that different from like several other Disney movies.
They do that.
Try something a little different.
Well, look at Pocahontas. Do you think Pocahontas, the Disney movie, it was based off of her real life? Hell no. She wasn't some young woman. She was a teenage girl who was trafficked into marriage with a white man twice her age.
There's like, I don't know. I feel like they realized early on, like, oh, the most emotional impact is like when a parent dies.
Bambi, they were just like,
they're like, we also too, and nowadays we can't parents show the parent dying really. We can't show the parent off screen. Like, we can show them like that they died off screen. Like, look at Lilo Stitch. We don't see the family die in the car crash. We just know it happened. But also too, like, look at the Lion King, the live action version. They basically took out most of Be Prepared and all the Nazi imagery because they didn't want to offend anyone. I'm like, but that's the most important aspect of Scar as a villain, though. There needs to be that similarity. See, back then, like, people, like, we're everyone says that we're so soft. No, man, it's the Nazis that are pussies.
I mean, that is true. like Nazi imagery being slowly taken out of media because it's offensive, like, is net harm, because it was always to make fun of and criticize and admonish that that ideology. So like going from, I mean, even just watching like sitcoms, even in the 70s, would like make note and reference, you know, because it wasn't that far away. They remembered, you know, never forget. And, you know, people eventually, without seeing it, without seeing it in our media explicitly, people forget.
It reminds me of that one episode of All in the Family where basically Archie Bunker befriends like a Jewish radical like who wants to commit terrorism. It's very crazy because they drew someone spray painted swastika on his door, and Archie's like, we got a cover. So he puts American flag over the swastika on the door, and everyone's like laughing and going, oh no. And I'm like, oh, so they knew back then that American exceptionalism has ties to far right and Nazism.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's crazy that this was a 70s thing.
Archie, I mean, that whole show, All the Family, is all about, like, trying to convince, you know, whatever audience was watching. These ideals that Archie is saying is old and busted. The new hotness is what the daughter is saying, what, what's his name, Rob Reiner is saying, what the wife is saying. Every episode, Archie's learning a lesson of compassion and caring.
Yeah, Echo. Yeah, they're the door and the Be Prepared number in the animated Lion King. They the hyenas are marching like the Gestapo.
Yeah.
During the number near the end, before Jeremy Irons blew his voice out and Jim Cummings had to take over.
But it's good to have just like even then, just the imagery of like if you see people marching like this,
you know what I mean.
Understand that it's evil and bad guy.
Yeah.
Understand that it's bad guy. Like, and people forget, and I can't fucking believe it. But anyways, this witch movie is very adorable.
Speaking of adorable, Letterboxd.
No Nazis in this movie.
I know. Speaking of adorable and no Nazis, Letterboxd, a place where film lovers, film haters, film curious folks gather with it to each other to discuss the films that they loved, the films they didn't love, the films that they thought were just wholesome, cute, adorable, nothing else to say other than that. Bottom of democracy. Everyone gets a chime and opine. It's just not the Siskel and Ebert's of the world. And with all that being said, these are the Letterboxd one-liners for Kiki's Delivery Service. Pretty fucked up that I wasn't born a cartoon witch.
Right? It seems like she finds a place that she can live. They call her meals. She just has to do a little bit of work in the bakery and like set up a business for herself. And she gets kind of everything from there. Like, she gets pretty much foster parents. Like, it seems, I don't know.
It's really dope.
And she's stressed out about it the whole time. It's the, like the bigotry of low expectations. It's like the stress of low expectations. It's like, more stress gets placed on
her, you know, the foster mother, so to speak, doesn't even really ask her to do much.
Yeah.
Just like, no, of course you have nowhere to stay. Come stay with me. Just, you know, you eat as
sometimes,
much as you
sometimes
if free, I'm, baby.
Sometimes if I'm too pregnant, you gotta watch the store.
No.
By the way, her husband is that jack dude, like who throws the bread in the oven, like, and he never even talks. It's probably, I mean, who knows what he'd say if he could talk? So maybe that's for the best.
Mm-hmm. True.
I like when he winks at Gigi, and Gigi's like, hmm? Because he's like, I helped set it up so she could stay.
Yeah. How dare you? That pie was made with her love, you fucking heartless monster.
Yeah, there. And then you hear the background. Well, it's good she didn't. The grandma didn't deliver the pie. The old girl would have said the same thing. She's like, she loves my pies, and then she's like, I hate her pies. I told her not to make one.
I mean, herring pie does not sound good.
You see what goes into the pies. But that's also like the girls in this that are like haughty or whatever. And then there's Kiki, who like actually helps out the old people and like cares for them. And I feel like that's its own part of that message, right? Like the young girls that are like the worst of this movie, and like there's a few of them that are like side characters that you're like, oh my god, this girl kind of sucks. Like, they're always the ones that don't care about the elderly. They don't care about, you know, people's feelings. Like, they're just kind of full of themselves. And it's like, community is an important part of this.
Yeah. Dombo be like, do you love me? Are you riding?
Kiki, do you love me? Are you riding?
What is that? Whose song is that? I've heard that Drake. Before. Oh, is that Drake. Really? Oh, Yvay.
It was Drake. Yeah. It was playing. It was playing literally every day for an entire summer.
That's why so I didn't want to sing mind. It like that.
Kiki, do you love me?
Don't really have much to say. It's just cute.
It really is.
Why watch Harry Potter when this exists?
Yeah, this makes Harry Potter suck. You gotta go to class. It does. You gotta go to school in Harry Potter. You get grades. They're like, oh, here's your grade. You failed.
And you might get killed by some being that wants revenge because, you know, weird
shit's
happening.
There isn't even anybody like making sure you're learning anything. You just have to stay where you are.
But that's about it. Well, it's funny too, is they showed the photos of Diagon Alley, and it's literally the exact same set from the Harry Potter movies for the HBO Max show. And I'm like,
I meant in this movie, no one's even like they're like, we gotta learn witch stuff. And it's like no one's even really paying attention to that part of it.
She doesn't even really do much like witch stuff other than fly on the broom.
I hope her mom teaches her the rheumatism potion because that's gotta go for like a lot.
Mm-hmm. Jeff Bezos after copying Kiki's next delivery. I am that very witch.
Thank your. He sends a bunch of people on broomsticks out to deliver to your house, and they're like, they're like peeing in bottles in the sky.
Wasn't that a Prime delivery ad? I feel like it was. Prime Day ad.
With the drones.
Wish I had a cute cat to help me with my depression too.
Hell yeah. So Christina has one. Christina has two.
I got two. Yeah, so those are Letterboxd one-liners for Kiki's delivery service. You can find Forrest over there logging the films that we go over and then some. Check it out. He's always doing awesome reviews. You can also find Conan Neutron. I think he might be almost done with the Criterion Challenge, or he might be done.
He said he's very up to date with it.
Very close. And you can find me at Christina. I vlog stuff sometimes. Get ready. The Bruce Springsteen movie's coming out. So I'm going to be logging that in this weekend. Going to see it with my mom on Saturday.
I'm curious about the Bruce Springsteen movie because they said that Bruce Springsteen like went to set and was hanging out watching it. Like, that's going to...
Yeah, he was there. It's
Jeremy Allen White, right?
Yeah. He's unconventionally attractive. I'm excited because as someone who's from Freehold, there's quite a bit of history with myself, with my family and Bruce Springsteen. So I'm excited to, you know, to be like the Leonardo DiCaprio meme and be like, recognizing, like, my mom be like, oh, there's a Jersey Freeze, there's Federici's, there's, you know, St. Rose Lima School and all that. So that's gonna be fun. Alex, do you got a Letterboxd account?
I do not have a Letterboxd account. Okay.
Well, you should get on that. But here are the plugs and then. Well, I'll let you guys plug yourself after we do the plug videos, and then we can do final thoughts, and we can get you guys on out of here without any crows attacking you. If you're watching us on YouTube, please like and subscribe, and then hit the bell to get notified whenever we're streaming. And we'd humbly request that you watch the video to the end, because it helps us with the algorithm and helps more film fans to discover the show. We're also monetized. If you want to get your chat questions definitely read on stream, you can always send us a super chat, which will help us keep the show going. Every cent helps. If you're watching on Twitch, you can gift us a free sub on Amazon Prime with your Prime membership, but getting subs on Twitch is always appreciated, and it helps to follow us on there as well. We also have an audio feed, which is available wherever you download podcasts, if you prefer to listen to podcasts rather than watch the stream. That's updated usually the same day we stream, but watching on YouTube and Twitch is the best way to get the show first, live as it happens. If you want to support us with a monthly donation and get access to all of our after parties forever, which go patron only after we do them, you can become a patron at patreon.com/movienightextra. Link is in the description for that. It really helps us keep the show going since we do have some expenses to make this happen. We also have a Discord community. Link is in the description for that. We sometimes watch movies we cover on there. We get into conversations about everything from film to TV shows to related podcasts. We even have a Discord channel for memes. It's really fun on there. You can find us on all the social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, Twitter, and Threads. You connect with us on all of those. Talk to us. We'd love to hear from you. Lastly, we recently made a TikTok at Movie Night Extra, where we're putting up short-form clips from the episodes. Okay, passing this to Conan so he can tell you about his music and this week's Protonic Reversal. Conan, who's on Protonic this week? Yeah, so... there's no Protonic, but Conan right now, he's in Salt Lake City, Utah, performing right now. So you probably, I mean, I'm guessing it's right now. So you probably missed getting tickets on that one. But Ace High Saloon tomorrow, he's in Boise, Idaho at Realms Arcade. The 23rd, he's in Eugene at John Henry's. The 24th, he's in Portland, Oregon at world famous Kenton Club. And October 25th, he's in Seattle with Rat City Recon. So, you know, if you're in any of those places, you know, buy tickets. But Christina, what have you been up to? What do you want to plug?
Besides being sick for a week, still streaming on the Twitch. I don't know why I put myself. I streamed like 8.5 hours one night, and then like I got sick again. I was like, yeah, I did too much. I did too much. You know, just not good. but tomorrow is Wednesday, which means second debate between Andrew Cuomo, Zohra Mamdani, and the real winner, Curtis Sliwa. Alex is going to be hosting starting at 7 tomorrow. I'm going to be popping in at 7:30. It's going to be fun. Hopefully, maybe we'll do a drinking game. And every time
hopefully Andrew Cuomo
mentions Hassan Piker in 9/11, we'll be fine. We'll be drunk. It'll take two or three drinks, but we'll be drunk.
I don't know. Letterhack invited me on for some point and said, let's jump on. So I'll probably jump on if I'm not sick tomorrow.
Yeah.
Word.
That's right. I'm excited. I got that going on. And also I've got a big costume ready for our Halloween weapons episode. It ain't witch related at all, because I felt like that would be kind of cliche, but it's going to be good.
Do you think the real reason why they haven't let Curtis Sliwa get super racist is because he would say radical Islam?
No one's okay, I'm a flood.
He cares that much, man. I really don't think he cares that much.
Yeah.
Hassan, I love all the TikToks.
But
it's like, anyway.
No, do you have anything you want to plug?
Oh, yes. Well, like Christina said, I will be on tomorrow at this space. Go follow this space on YouTube. We are live there right now.
We are. Yeah.
we'll be covering the second Zohran Cuomo debate. I have YouTube and Twitch. I'm pretty good about streaming at least once a week on my Twitch on weekends. So look for me on the weekends, Fridays.
Yeah, you do too many more days than that. I feel like
I'm trying to up it. But
I just feel like things. I feel like things get weird when you got to stream like
constantly. Yeah, I know. Yeah. But on my YouTube, Devil's Advocate Productions, I got my last video was a diss track towards Drake, honestly, because ironically, rather
Kiki, that, you love because me.
He lost the lawsuit. So this reactor who was named in the lawsuit put out a diss track when he found out he was named. And now that Drake lost, he put out another diss track. So reaction video is on YouTube.
I like this thing of like you lose a lawsuit, you're like, but I still put out of this guy.
Yeah. this last South Park episode review. If you missed it, I break it all down on what the plot was, what's going on with Peter Thiel hanging out in South Park and Jesus possibly turning to the dark side. Album reaction.
South Park's getting too close for comfort.
Yeah, I know.
They get Charlie Kirk to train somebody, and then he gets plugged, and it's like.
And I have my Peacemaker review of the whole season 2 of Peacemaker, what I thought of it. So, Christina, I know you want to check that out. So I make shit on YouTube. I stream on Twitch. I'm on Blue Sky and Twitter. At Devil's Advocate C, right there. And thank you again for having me on.
Yeah, Alex, do you have final thoughts? You wanna?
honestly, I like this movie. It's not. I don't know. I think I'd return to it, but it would be like, you know, it's a summer day. We're on vacation somewhere. We just want to throw something on for vibes. That's the kind of movie this is. it's not something, it's not so like, it doesn't have as much action as like Spirited Away, which is also kind of like a lazy day kind of movie. So it's even lazier than that. But I like this movie. It was a fun watch. Gave me an excuse to watch a new Ghibli movie that I hadn't seen, and I'm always down for that.
Christina, anything you want to add? As a fellow, watched this as a kid.
Yeah, it's a good movie, and it was fun to rediscover it. I remembered why I liked it.
Yeah, I had the same kind of thing watching the English one today, because I watched the Japanese one first, and I watched the English dub, and I was like, I remember how much I loved this when I was a kid and I watched this.
Yeah.
But next week we're going to be going live with Josh Dugan. We're going to be talking about
Love Witch Love Baby. Baby.
Yeah.
Dude, the Star Wars month you guys did was awesome. Like seeing all those those people like involved with actually making it was cool.
So Josh Dugan, Love Witch, you know, join us for that. And then the week after that's going to be Halloween. And we're talking about Weapons. That's going to be a really fun time.
Ooh, Weapons.
It's released on HBO Max on the 24th of this month. So that's cool.
I was really like, is it still going to be in theaters? Can I go see it again? Cause you know, I mean, I saw it, but I was like, I like to watch stuff fresh. And then they're like, oh, it's going to be dropped on HBO Max on the 24th. And I was like, oh, I'm there.
Perfect.
But join us for that. And tomorrow, join this space, you know, for their Zoran, Cuomo, Sliwa, and I don't know. I feel like there should be a fourth guy. I feel like they should let Eric Adams come
Eric
back.
Eric Adams, come back one last time.
Be crazy. Mr. Adams, like, do you have like anything WWE. That you'd like to respond to from these candidates? And he's like.
So all of a sudden, you just hear the glass shatter like Stone Cold. He just comes out.
And he's like,
I'm back New York. Turkey.
New York is the city of the world. Okay, thank you.
New York is the New York of the world. Zoran had a crack pipe in the microphone.
He's like, look in my popular knapsack here. But I think this is our shortest episode to date.
I mean, it's an easy movie to go through.
Again, it's very chill. It's a very chill movie.
Which is good because we're all kind of sick. So
Kiki's delivery service. What I would like her to deliver to me is some throat lozenges.